My guest today, Grant Smith, is a familiar presence on Takes on the World. As Executive Director of the Institute for Research Middle East Policy, or IRMEP, in Washington, D.C., he has established a reputation as a foremost expert on the Israel lobby and the questionable as well as illegal shenanigans carried out by Israel in its relations with the United States. Along the way, he has written at least a half dozen books exposing the Israel lobby, Israel's theft of nuclear materials, all of which are too hot for even most of the alternative press to handle. He has also doggedly used the Freedom of Information Act to obtain declassified materials that expose what have been described as Israel's fifth column activities in the United States, and these can be found on his website under IRMEP, I-R-M-E-P, .org, /ILA. This has on occasion taken him to the D.C. federal court, where just recently he won a three-year fight with the Department of Defense to obtain a document from the late 1980s which discussed Israel's nuclear weapons program, the existence of which no American official is permitted to formally acknowledge. If you want a definition of power, that's it. He has just filed a new suit, this one against the CIA, demanding that it turn over information concerning Israel's theft of enriched uranium from an Allentown, Pennsylvania plant more than 50 years ago. And you heard the news about the suit first right here. Welcome once again, Grant Smith, the Takes on the World.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me on to break some breaking news.
Break some breaking news, yes, about the about the New Mex suit. Before we get into that, I just want to get into what I've been talking about. Is Benjamin Netanyahu is coming to town next week for the annual AIPAC conference and to address a joint session of Congress. But it's under a dark cloud as far as the White House is concerned, with President Obama taking in the welcome mat and pulling down their shades, and Joe Biden off on a trip to somewhere, anywhere, not to have to preside over the joint session of Congress. Why do we have smiles on our face about this? Is this a real crisis in U.S.-Israel relations, but how deep do you think it's going to go?
Well, I think it's deep, and I think it's going to remain at least through the rest of the Obama administration, which doesn't show any signs of wanting to have its careful negotiations undermined through Israeli leaking of confidential information about the negotiations, or Netanyahu's intervention with lobbying organizations in the United States like AIPAC, and his speech to Congress, which, as you mentioned in your intro, is heavily financed by Israel lobbying PACs and individuals, and under a lot of pressure to follow his lead.
Well, it's obviously, according to the stories I've heard, is that John Boehner, who invited him 4 years ago, Netanyahu 4 years ago, and Dermer, the ambassador, former Republican operative, didn't even inform AIPAC of this. This is difficult to believe.
Right.
AIPAC has been leading the fight. As a matter of fact, would you say stopping Iran or even producing another war with Iran has been its main agenda topic since the Iraq war began?
Absolutely. They have been hyping the Iran, or the alleged Iran threat. I don't agree, and I don't think you do either, that it actually is a threat. That's been their main program and one of their key fundraising points for a decade now. And there is, you know, as part of the story you mentioned that they weren't consulted, apparently their crescendo here in the first quarter of 2015 was supposed to be AIPAC leading the derailment and not having sort of the foreign agency shown in this way, in which Netanyahu even outshines AIPAC.
A number of Jewish organizations are clearly worried about this confrontation because, for one thing, it has broken up what has historically been bipartisan support for Israel on both the Democrat and Republican Party. This is something that AIPAC in the past has bragged about, that there's one issue that both Republicans and Democrats will get together, even if they're fighting on every other issue, is their support for Israel. And this has caused some real upset among Democrats who are traditionally strong supporters of Israel. How deep do you think that's going to go?
I think it's going to go as deep as the ability to direct funds to and away from candidates in the next elections. I see a lot of this as a checkbook issue. And, you know, they've had problems in the past. This is not the first time Netanyahu has landed on a lily pad in the United States to launch a major initiative. You have him in the past coming to hype the Iran threat, but also pressure U.S. immigration policy on Soviet immigrants to the United States and Israel, you know, changing visa rules and that sort of thing. So this is by far not the first time that there's been a major Israeli governmental intervention and launching a major initiative in front of Congress or a lobbying organization. But the split that you mentioned, where the traditionally heavily pro-Israel Democratic Party is appearing to lose some ground to the Republicans, is something that they're no doubt worrying about. And they probably should be. They're concerned about getting elected, and they're concerned about the funding flows. So it's definitely welcome to those of us who don't view the relationship and what happens with favor. But, you know, we'll see. But again, I think the important thing here is that there is controversy and there is actually open discussion, even in the establishment media, about what happened.
Well, the Democrats are in a particularly vulnerable position because for years they've been heavily reliant on money from liberal Jews. And even though the Republicans, a certain code of Republicans, have made efforts to woo Jewish voters away from the Democratic Party, this has not been successful. And I think this is why a number of Jewish organizations are concerned, even the Anti-Defamation League. Abe Foxman was very concerned about Netanyahu's appearance, and there was an attempt to get him not to stop it, but to reschedule after the Israeli elections. So this is something that previously has not ever been fought out in public, so to speak, these kind of differences. And you have the right wing of the Jewish organizations, the Zionist Organization of America, for example, and Republican Jewish Coalition, even threatening members of Congress who do not come to the joint session with retribution. I mean, this has become a talk about foreign agents. Right. How much more proof do you need that these people are working for another country?
Well, it's amazing because, you know, you could call the Republican Jewish Coalition Sheldon Adelson's checkbook. We have a copy of one of their schedules of contributions, and he's by far the largest contributor to that organization. It's almost embarrassing how much money he gives to it. And the ZOA, of course, has been, in the past, asked to register as an Israeli foreign agent 7 times. And I think their main concern is not appearing to be what they actually are. I mean, they're basically housed in the same building that a lot of former foreign agents have occupied, whether it's the World Zionist Organization or the Jewish Agency for Israel. I mean, they have a very thin line to tread in claiming to be an exclusively American organization without any foreign direction. So I don't think they like having this sort of thing happen where it's so blatant, but they are definitely going to be counting heads and cracking the whip and holding members of Congress to account with the premise, partially factually based, that they can steer those campaign dollars, which is their main, it's really their main argument behind the scenes, is that we can control the flow of campaign contributions. It's all about money.
Well, speaking of Sheldon Adelson, it's never been publicized press with all the stories written about the millions of dollars he has spread around the Republican Party, that he spoke before an Israeli audience and apologized for the fact that he had served in the American Army and not in the Israeli Army, and that he was looking forward to his children becoming members of the Israeli Defense Forces. And this is certainly would strike a strange chord among Republicans who look for his money, not the politicians who have no principles, but a number of people, American citizens, who might object to his betraying his own country or acknowledging the fact that he's apologizing for being in the U.S. Army when their sons and daughters have gone into the Army. Many of them have been in themselves.
Right. Well, you know, I think you've mentioned it before that the American Friends of the IDF are very interesting organization that actually provides funding to the IDF. They do that in coordination with a lot of the political arms of Jewish federations, such as the Jewish Community Relations Councils that host fundraisers for them. And you almost get a sense that because of this publicity, that this may be a driving force in Americans joining the IDF as opposed to joining the American Armed Forces. They would, of course, deny that, and they do deny it in their tax filings, that they have any recruitment role, but they do glamorize the IDF. They call it the world's most moral army, et cetera, et cetera. And it is having an impact in which Americans and dual citizen American Israelis are being killed during these rampages through Gaza and border conflicts, which essentially drags the United States and certainly the news media into the side of lamenting the losses of these Americans who've gone over to fight rather than serving in the U.S. Armed Forces. It's a real touchy sort of flashpoint that can, I think, in a sort of cynical way, drag the United States into conflicts it shouldn't be involved in, and which the American people, for the most part, you know, when you poll them, they don't want to take sides in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Well, speaking of polls, you had one conducted for IRMEP about Netanyahu's visit. But one thing you mentioned in your poll that was not mentioned in any of the other polls taken by other pollsters about this was that Netanyahu was named in an FBI document declassified, which is on your website, that he was the Israeli end of a smuggling operation for nuclear triggers, Krytons, back in the mid-'80s, which was initiated. One end was, Arnold Milchan, the Israeli producer in Hollywood, a big favorite in Hollywood. The guy in the middle went to jail. Please tell us about that.
Yeah, sure. CNN did a poll of Americans asking how many were in favor of the Netanyahu visit and found that 63% were opposed. That followed our poll, which was much larger. It was fielded to a larger group, which found 70.8% of Americans opposed. The only difference between the two polls is that we mentioned that Netanyahu was involved, according to FBI documents that we obtained in 2012, on the Israeli side of a Ministry of Defense smuggling ring, which would order export prohibited items through a network of companies. That Arnon Milchan, the Hollywood producer who's winning so many awards for his Birdman movie now, but he's a longtime fixture in Hollywood, that they had set up to do precisely that, including 800 Krytrons. So, you know, people who want to Google Netanyahu and Krytrons can see him mentioned in that. And our poll simply asks, if he was involved in this, should he be interviewed by the FBI before he's even allowed to enter the U.S.? If he were from any other country, which didn't have a large affinity group working for him and on his behalf at every level of politics in the United States, if he were from, I don't know, South Africa or from, Iran, certainly, that would take place. But because he is who he is, he's as untouchable as Arnon Milchan. But Americans, when they're informed of things like that, have a different opinion about Netanyahu, for sure.
Well, certainly the mainstream press, you've distributed this information out on the Internet But the mainstream press, I guess, knows, self-censors itself of nothing else. That once they, if they get into running stories about this, they will find they have picket lines around their house to be called anti, around their building, be called anti-Semitic, and have several organizations attacking them and demanding retractions. Like
right, the organizations that do sort of censorship of attacking outlets that do too much reporting on this, you know, include Camera and Flame and all sorts of others that, that attack that type of reporting. But I think most journalists know at this point that if they go there, that they're going to get in trouble, and that that can take many forms. It doesn't have to be picketing. It can be, you know, not getting that next promotion, suddenly finding that their services are no longer required, being offered to cover things that don't touch on this. There is a concerted, ongoing campaign to shape this sort of news, and unless you're completely independent of those sort of funding and other pressures, you can't do these types of stories, and almost no mainstream, you know, elite establishment journalist does do these types of stories.
Actually, only because Tom Friedman is an untouchable, he's such an important fixture of the New York Times, could he actually say something that we've been saying for years, that Congress is bought and sold by the Israel lobby? That's what he said 4 years ago after Congress gave Netanyahu 29 standing ovations. The next column that that Friedman wrote was that the reason this happened is that Congress is bought and sold by the Israel lobby. And he was attacked in the Jewish press for that. But I guess Friedman is too big to fall or fail. He can get away with it.
Yeah, he's already made his bones, so to speak. He was covering for the entire Milchan Netanyahu Heli trading smuggling back when that was going off. So he's done more service, I would say, that he has still a positive balance on his sheet that he can bank on. I mean, he proposed in his column that the Krytrons were actually being used in Israel to heat soup rather than actually trigger nuclear weapons. So he's done some very foolish and transparent service that I think has been appreciated and far exceeds anything he's done recently to talk about how each one of the standing ovations was paid for by AIPAC, which I believe he said.
Right. And actually, it may well be that he's smart enough to see the danger for Israel personally and the danger or possible danger to the American Jewish community with the hardening of Israel-U.S. relations. There's a lot of things that Israel has to answer for. You have uncovered a number of them. Matter of fact, you recently won a suit over the Department of Defense after several years to declassify or release a file or a report in which the U.S. Department of Defense analyzed the nuclear positions of a number of countries, including Israel. Maybe tell us about that.
Sure. One of the biggest deceptions that is has been deployed against Americans is the Golda Meir, Richard Nixon era strategic ambiguity, in which Nixon, fearing reprisals from, as he put it, Zionist organizations in the U.S., decided to go along with the proposal never to discuss Israel's nuclear weapons arsenal, something the Israelis also refused to confirm or deny. And this campaign of deception has been going on. There are new regulations from the Department of Energy forbidding any contractor or federal employee from ever discussing foreign nuclear capabilities that we believe is related to this gag order over Israel's nuclear weapons. So you never hear any government official confirming or denying Israel has nuclear weapons, even though in another survey that we ran, we found that most Americans, over 60%, believe it exists. So it's kind of useless to pursue at this point. But anyway, so there was a study done in 1987 that did an in-depth analysis of Israel's nuclear weapons facilities. They found that SOREC, which was a reactor provided by Eisenhower's Adams for Peace program had been converted, along with Dimona, which was always intended to be converted into a nuclear weapons production facility, quote, equivalent to our Los Alamos, Lawrence Livermore, and Oak Ridge National Laboratories, running, quote, the full nuclear gamut of activities from engineering to nuclear, well, what they said, this is a technology base required for nuclear weapons design and fabrication, unquote. So the Israeli facilities were advanced. They were operating outside of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. They were using U.S. technologies. And the Department of Defense, of course, didn't want to release this report, even though it wasn't classified, and fought it for years in the Freedom of Information Act administrative process, and then fought us in court between September and January not to release the report. But they finally broke down and did release it. And I think it is actually having somewhat of an impact on reporting. I noticed that Reuters, which usually is very careful about how it talks about Israel's nuclear weapons program, did an unqualified report back on February 23rd, saying that Israel has the Middle East's only nuclear arsenal. So that's pretty unequivocal. And I think this improves reporting, and it allows people, you know, to look at this government source and finally just drop this lead of the administration and the Israelis to constantly obfuscate and never have this equation or part of the equation entered into whenever the Israeli, whenever the Iranian nuclear weapons program, which doesn't exist, is discussed. So it's, I think it's, it was a good win, and it may even signal a shift in the administration from not wanting to be a part of this anymore, part of this charade which undermines the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, and really shows the U.S. to be hypocritical in dealing with the problem of proliferation.
It was interesting that initially the Department of Defense, one of the reasons they told the court that they did not want to release it is they needed to get Israel's approval.
Right. I don't know if they ever did get Israel's approval, and I don't think there's any way I could find out at this point, but they did spend the greater part of January and February approaching the Israeli embassy and asking them for permission to release this U.S. government, or you'd say taxpayer-funded report. And whether they got a response or not is unclear, but that was an incredible deference, and it was optional, too. They didn't have to do that, but they insisted upon it, deference to a foreign government. Our position, though, in court and very publicly is, hey, you guys, the Department of Defense, discovered this program, and there are two amendments to U.S. foreign aid law, the Symington and Glenn amendments, which prohibit any taxpayer-funded aid from going to a country that is discovered to be using this reprocessing technology outside the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. So, you know, our position in court was that Americans had been defrauded over $80 billion since 1987 because the government refused to cut off aid that it was legally bound to do under these foreign aid amendments. And, of course, we haven't heard any discussion of that. But Americans should certainly ask their members of Congress why they continue writing these checks when the aid is, in fact, and demonstrably illegal.
In that case, you had a very sympathetic judge.
Well, I would say we had a very fair judge. A lot of judges on the D.C. Circuit and other federal courts are just incredibly deferential to federal agency proclamations of national security requiring that they don't release documents under the Freedom of Information Act. I think that some judges, though, are more skeptical. This judge was willing to look at all of the evidence and the fact that, you know, everything that the government said whenever there was any digging turned out not to be true. So I think it was fortunate that we could get this wrapped up in a relatively efficient way. The government, or the Department of Defense right now, is talking about reimbursing our legal fees, and we're moving on to the next case.
And that next case is quite interesting. You've written a book called Divert, which I interviewed you about when it came out, about the theft of by Israel of enriched uranium from the NUMEC plant in Allentown, Pennsylvania, which is now a Superfund site for what they left behind. But now you've filed a suit that will be talked about briefly in the beginning, that's asking for the CIA files on what it knows about that illegal transfer of enriched uranium. Tell us about that.
Sure. There was a mysteriously underfunded nuclear reprocessing plant built within a shuttered steel mill in Apollo, Pennsylvania, right at the end of 1959, by a future Zionist organization president, Ivan Novick, and a Pittsburgh local chapter president, Zalman Shapiro. And they started receiving contracts to process highly enriched uranium of a unique signature into naval fuel under a contract. Zalman Shapiro had been on the Nautilus program and was quite brilliant in working out design problems. At any rate, they managed to lose an incredibly large amount of weapons-grade uranium, enough for over a dozen bombs, during their tenure, which lasted until 1968 when they were finally forced out of the operation. And the Central Intelligence Agency has always been of the, their analysis have always said off the record that there was a diversion of weapons-grade uranium into the Israeli program, and that the sources of highly enriched uranium they picked up outside of Dimona before it went critical, it could produce anything, matched the type of uranium that NUMEC was handling. And there were also all sorts of investigations revealing executives stuffing equipment with highly enriched uranium canisters and shipping them to Israel. A documented visit of Rafael Itan and Avraham Bender and other Israeli spies to the plant during times of highest losses. So what we've asked the Central Intelligence Agency for are its files, its core files on the diversion, why it is so convinced that this diversion took place. And we're not doing that for purely historical reasons, although it would be a good thing to add to the pantheon of Israeli smuggling fronts that have been erected in this country, from MarTech to the Sonneborn Institute to Service Airways and just a dozen others that were used to smuggle conventional weapons. There is actually this cleanup that's going on, as you mentioned, by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers that's going to cost taxpayers $500 million. And we think that these CIA files, along with other files in the public domain, can, should, and will be used to fight for getting the Israelis who are behind all of this to pay for the cleanup. So we don't think taxpayers should be paying for what was essentially an underfunded, uncaring front organization that polluted its environment and then cashed out when the smuggling front was bought out under the, I would say, corrupt machinations of the Atomic Energy Commission. So it's an interesting lawsuit. I think it's a stronger lawsuit than the one that we just won, because other authorities have ordered the CIA to release information it said could never be released about this. And we think it's about time Americans understand that Israel's nuclear weapons program not only exists, but that it polluted the environs of a very quaint town on the Kiskanee River, just a little bit northeast of Pittsburgh.
Is it possible to have you contacted people in that town to become involved in the suit? I know you just filed it, but to get some friends of the court or amicus brief in your behalf?
It's possible. If we do get any amicus briefs filed in this, I would hope they would come from people like former Nuclear Regulatory Commissioner Victor Galinsky, who is convinced that there was a diversion and wants CIA files released. Roger Matheson, who headed the Atomic Energy Commission's investigation of this and is now outside of government, I'd hope that he would file some friend of the court briefs because he also believes there's a diversion that took place and that this information needs to come out. Some of the local city council members of Apollo who I've met might be good people to do that. There is a great deal of interest in getting this site cleaned up, and it is on it's on an accelerated path to get that done. Unfortunately, neither the senators or congressional reps of Pennsylvania want this material or have indicated that they want to help get it released. They would rather have taxpayers fund it. And some of the local residents probably would view this as being a long shot, too. So it remains to be seen whether there'd be a grassroots movement for justice to occur or whether being tired of delays and the costs, both health and environmental, of this, they'll simply want taxpayers to pay for it. But we think that the case is strong and that at very least this information needs to come out so that people know what happened.
I could just see, if it passes prologue, I could just see Congress appropriating the money to pay reimburse Israel for paying for the cleanup. As we used to have the what they call the Cranston Amendment. Senator Alan Cranston had an amendment named after him, which when Israel was getting economic aid from the United States, there was a bill, became a public law, which required Congress to every year expropriate enough money to give to Israel to pay what it owed the United States. Try to get your bank to do that.
I mean, yeah. Well, all people need to know about Cranston is to Google Michael Goland, who was the straw candidate who managed to, in a three-way election, suck enough votes away from Cranston's opponent to let him be elected. And then after that, he essentially became a very good asset for the Israel lobby. So if you look up Ed Zhao and Michael Goland, you'll see how corrupt the AIPAC director who organized all of that, how corrupt their machinations were. And a person didn't actually go to jail for that, but Cranston managed to stay in office. So it's a lot of history there.
Well, Cranston was part of the Keating Five, along with John McCain, people forget about. My guest, by the way, is Grant Smith. Those of you who have heard him before might recognize his voice. He's executive director of the Institute for Research in Middle East Policy, and he knows where the bones are buried. He's trying to find more bones. You mentioned, before we go away, the Sonnenborn Institute. That goes way back to the beginning of Israel and efforts to deceive the government of the United States and export war munitions to Israel. It would be pre-state as Palestine there.
Right. Well, of course. And that's, it really goes back to the Jewish Agency, which was a government in waiting, which set up an office in New York. The Jewish Agency head, executive director, by the name of David Ben-Gurion, came and organized financing for an entire smuggling network, paid the checks out of the New York office, and although hundreds and hundreds of people were caught smuggling, stealing, shipping explosives, they were never prosecuted because of the financial muscle of people like Abraham Feinberg and other major Israel lobbyists who were able to buy their way out and ensure that only a handful of lower-level people were prosecuted. And I would say the same power is still at play. You'll never see any major prosecutions for this sort of major wrongdoing, whether it was Zalman Shapiro and Numek or the AIPAC executives caught trying to trigger a war against Iran with stolen classified information. You'll just never see any prosecutions because the Justice Department has lost so many times, been outmaneuvered so many times, and all it takes really to quash an espionage investigation is the visit of a couple of Israeli diplomats or military officials to the politically appointed attorney general, and all these cases always disappear. So there's a real corruption element that started with the beginning, which was the weapons smuggling, the violations of the Neutrality and Arms Control Act. And it just continues to this day. It's really not worth the time of day to meet with Justice Department officials. It's pretty clear what the pattern is. It's pretty clear that they won't prosecute anything. They'll call off FBI investigations. They'll thwart them. And it's a corruption crisis that people need to start getting involved in. It's not just about Israel-Palestine. It's about the corruption of the United States government and the activities at every single level by hundreds and hundreds of organizations that are really steering the United States in the wrong direction.
And it's a sad commentary on what I call the Palestine Solidarity Movement, is that largely in the alternative media, with just a handful of exceptions, have largely ignored all of this and have focused their attention on what is going on in the West Bank or in Gaza, when the source of all that is here. They're not going to change anything on the ground over there. One thing,
That's why there has to be a focus on the lobby's role in all of that. And there is an event here in Washington, D.C. on April 10th at the National Press Club, in which the Israel lobby's role in all of this, which is a central one, is going to be explored. People can look at the website IsraelLobbyUS.org to get information about that conference.
And I should say I will be one of the speakers there, speaking about my experience with the Anti-Defamation League, which until the early 90s ran the one of the largest private spying organizations in the United States. And
key story.
Sorry?
I said that's just a key that's a key story that people need to hear.
Right, and the reason I could talk about it on the air is the suit we had against them was settled without me signing a confidentiality agreement, which allows me to talk about what we learned about the Anti-Defamation League and its true role as an adjunct for Israel and the United States. So we've come down toward at the end of the hour. Grant, your website again is
IRMEP.org, and for the Israel Lobby, Is It Good for the U.S., Is It Good for Israel Conference, is IsraelLobbyUS.org.
And I should say, if people really want to find out the insidious role AIPAC, Israel Lobby, and Israeli agents have played in the United States and have it documented, government declassified documents, please go to Grant Smith's blog, or not blog, website. It is IRMEP.org/ILA. Well, Grant, we've come to the end of another interesting conversation. I look forward to seeing you in April. And thank you for being our guest today on Takes on the World.
Thanks so much for having me on and keeping the spotlight on these issues. It's so important.
Right on. Thank you.